Hey, what's up? It's the Black and Jew Podcast.
Black and Jew
Podcast. What's up? How's it going, guys?
That would be horrible if that was our intro music.
That would be horrible.
I had an idea for intro music, but I never got around to recording it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what was your idea?
I was going to be like, he's black, he's Jewish, this is how we gonna do it. It's how. No, wait. I fucked up. It's black. It would be like, he's black. Yeah. He's black. Yeah. He's Jewish. Oi. It's how we gonna do it. He's black. He's Jewish.
It sounds like a Wiggle song.
It's how we gonna do. It's the Black and Jew Podcast. Yeah, that's how.
Piano riff.
It could be good.
It could be real good.
If you put like a little funky riff under it.
I didn't say Wiggle songs are bad.
Hey, it does not sound like a Wiggle song. If you put the right wah guitar under it, it would sound funky. I think it'd be like.
I feel so weird right now because I don't have lotion on.
What?
Yeah, I don't have lotion. I have facial moisturizer.
Are we going to deal with an Ashy Reggie situation in a second?
I am Ashy, and the streets can't be seeing me like all Ashy.
The streets can't be seeing me. What street is that again? Messina?
Messina Avenue? Messina. Oh, no. Yeah. Especially Messina. Messina doesn't understand about Ashy.
Yeah, we're pretty hood over here in Messina. But this side of Coral Gables, we're very close to A Street. Very close to the hookers.
I've never seen a hooker on A Street.
Dude, I see hookers all the time on A Street.
I haven't.
That's what A Street is for, is picking up fucking hookers that are trying to live their dream of supporting themselves in America.
All right, so I'm going to pick up a hooker next time.
Yeah, yeah. I like how that's the dream for so many other people in other countries. It's like, I want to just not be able to sustain myself.
What?
Yeah, that's people, like someone comes over here, they're like, their dream is to just not die from starvation or to be able to have an apartment.
You mean like,
you know?
the dream bar is so low for some other people.
The dream bar is low, like, in a lot of other countries.
I just don't want to get my head chopped off today.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Low dream bar. It makes our dreams seem kind of trivial, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, that's very, like, I want to be a comedian. I don't want to die from cholera.
Yeah.
How's everything?
Like, if we gave up our dreams to get a really shitty office job, we will be living the dream for most of the world, for billions of people. That would be like amazing to them. Like just going in an air conditioned office every day, your life expectancy goes up like 20 years, you know?
You know what? Now that you bring that up, it seems like dreams are quite the privilege.
Yeah.
Dreams
check
are like,
your privilege with those dreams.
Check your first world privilege.
You should tell the Tumblr users that. The fact that you can sit in an air-conditioned room and bitch on Tumblr about people checking their privilege.
That's a huge privilege. That's the biggest privilage.
That's a huge privilege.
That's the original privilege.
It's like, you got like the highest level of privilege, which is like a white dude. But like being an upper-middle-class white woman or middle-class white woman that's writing on Tumblr, it's not that too much far down from that. There's a lot of rungs down. That's like you're on like the second rung. You know what I mean?
That's the type of thing someone would say to piss off someone that is talking about privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the type of thing that'd be three comments down and be like, you know that you have privilege because you're sitting down, right?
Yeah, and then you'd get that comment deleted.
They'd reblog it, delete your comment.
Yeah, I don't think they like checking their privilege, the people that are accusing people. Because in order to just having time to have these thoughts and express them, you have to be at a state of such privilege. Like no one working three jobs has time to sit there and think about privilege.
Okay. Very interesting. Very interesting.
Uh-huh.
So the people most affected by the systems of oppression are too oppressed to think
exactly
of those systems of oppression.
Exactly.
So the person that is not so oppressed is in a double state of privilege because they can talk about privilege.
I don't know if it's a double state of privilege, but it's certainly a state of privilege, you know? Because, like, no one gets off their job at 7-Eleven on the double shift that they just worked after getting off their job at like some the gas station, the other 7-Eleven or whatever. You know, I'm so privileged. I don't know how working multiple jobs works.
I'm so privileged. That's
how privileged I am. I don't know how
multiple jobs work.
When someone says they have three jobs, I don't know how. Well, you know, you get off the light night shift to Walmart. You sleep for 4 hours. You start the early shift at the gas station to barely make ends meet. You're not like, you know, let me stop and write about white privilege for a second. What do you think's on the rung of privilege? I feel like white man, highest form of privilege.
White straight male, yeah.
White straight male, cis white straight male, if you will. Number two, white straight woman.
White straight woman?
What do you think?
Damn, that's a tough one.
You think white straight woman?
Because, I mean, you know, that woman thing, that really knocks you down a couple pegs.
How many pegs, though, really?
Okay, well let's just say white, if you couple white, it with something, middle, yeah, you're right.
Like, yeah, think about it. Like what would be... Okay, so we all know that males are the most privileged.
Okay, yeah.
Right? We're the privileged sex. Okay. Non-trans, cisgendered males.
Okay.
Whatever the hell you want to call it. I don't think anyone really knows the difference that's listening to this. But... Or except for what's your friend's name in Orlando?
Nell.
Nell, she probably knows.
Nell definitely
what's
knows.
What's up, Nell? Yeah, Nell definitely knows. She might be gritting her teeth right now. Whatever. So we've got white male privilege.
Okay,
so men are the most privileged sex. True. No question about that.
No question.
Women, you know, angry Twitter misogynists will disagree, but they're wrong, and they really need to get laid, so we don't listen to them. And then under that, right, so we got that, and the most privileged race are white people, mm-hmm. okay? So let's put a black guy, all right, against a white woman.
Okay.
Who's more privileged?
The white woman.
The white woman. Because women have to deal with their fair share of bullshit, but so do black people.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like there's a lot more things piled upon a black guy. Like mm-hmm. like a white woman can walk into a store and look like have her hair in like a crazy bun, and like just look like sort of on the borderline of homeless, and no one would think she's stealing anything.
They think she's a hipster.
Yeah, exactly. I don't feel like a black guy couldn't do that.
No, black guy couldn't do that.
No.
That's why black people are always dressed to the nine.
Yeah, exactly.
Because their parents always told them, yo, you better not look raggedy, because if you look raggedy...
Someone's going to start asking questions.
Exactly. So that's why we must always have better shoes than you.
Yeah, that's why we need the Jordans, you know?
That's why we need the Jordans.
Like, I got Jordans, but not out of necessity. I just liked them, you know? These, like, low-top Jordans. But it's just because I liked them. It's not because I'm worried. You know, the first time I ever was profiled, not the time I was in London, actually. So this is the second time I was profiled. Let me correct myself. It's when I was in Canada, all right? Mm-hmm. And I was really high because weed was, you could consume it pretty much illegally there. I was in this like, you know, sweatshirt, like pullover sweatshirt, what a hoodie, right? And it was kind of distressed. And then I had these jeans that, you know, I was 19 and I didn't care about my personal fashion. So they had holes in them and shit. They looked pretty crappy. I had this like camo beanie on and this crappy backpack I got from an army surplus store, right? That I used to use for all my backpacks, and had like a bleach stain on it. And I looked like kind of shitty, looked a little raggedy, right? And I was limping. And I was limping, so I looked pretty raggedy, right? And there's a lot of homeless people in Vancouver. So I'm like, why don't I just act like I'm homeless? So I kind of try to give off an air of being homeless. And it worked. And I got like some like that guy's homeless looks, like some looks at me like that guy's definitely homeless. And you know, there's so many white people there that there's tons of white homeless people, so your race didn't matter. You could easily be like an Aryan homeless guy there. There's a lot of them. So I went to this store. I bought yogurt at this pharmacy, okay? And I didn't have a spoon, so I went to a 7-Eleven to go get a spoon.
Yeah.
All right.
Because, you know, they dispense them there. Yeah.
Yeah, they got spoons for whatever you're going to buy. So I grabbed a spoon, put it in my pocket, and then I'm walking out the door through the line, okay? And the lady goes, you, stop. And I'm like, oh, she's not talking to me because of my white male privilege. I didn't ever think someone would be telling me to stop. So I'm like, whoa, what are you talking to me? And she's like, yeah, what do you have in your pocket? And I'm like, an apple and a spoon? And she's like, what, you look, don't go around looking so dodgy. Get out of my store.
So I'm glad he told you. Yeah. And she told you that.
You said, don't go around looking so dodgy. I'm like, but guess homeless experiment worked.
I have been the times I'm aware of it, because, you know, I'm just always getting profiled.
You're always getting profiled.
So I'm just...
The times where it's been obvious I've been profiled. It's way more obvious to me than with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't happen to me a lot.
I was once in this, like, corner
store. Except when people ask me to do their taxes on the street. Anyway, continue. Look at his nose. He must know how to do a...
They just have all the receipts. Oh, come on, please help me. Come on, man.
He must know about IRAs. Continue.
So I was in this corner store. It was Asian-owned. And yeah. I think there's, like, this natural inclination there, because they didn't know English very well, and the bunch of kids always come in there. So I don't mean, like, natural Asian inclination to, like, look kind of suspicious. Not that. But anyway, I come in with my friends, and, you know, they look white, but they're Cuban. One's Honduran, one's Cuban. Yeah. The other one's, like, Mexican, but he's the palest person I know.
Yeah.
He looks like a Boo from Mario. It's ridiculous.
Like Conquistador Mexican, not Mountain Man Mexican.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm there, and, like, there's this lady at the counter, this Asian lady at the counter, and then there's one at the door.
All right.
Now, I'm looking through the stuff, because they also have, like, some real cool, interesting, like, you know, I think it's candies from China.
Oh, okay.
So they have, like, you know, all these cool candies, and I'm looking through it, you know, like, shuffling through it. And the old Asian lady, she's at least infinity. Like, she's like a raisin with legs. It was amazing how old she was. Had slip-ons on, had, like, this pink cardigan and these, like, aqua blue shorts.
Okay.
Like, she's following me. Like, she's tailing me. Like, she's legit tailing me around the store. I'm looking through it, and, like, she's also organizing the stuff as I touch it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look back.
And then she cuts off a piece of your hair for an ancient Asian vitality potion.
She collected one of my tears. Yeah. And then I look back, and then she turns away. Like she doesn't know how to play Metal Gear Solid. Like, she just turns away.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I kind of almost say out loud, I know you're following me. I'm just going to go to the door. So I just go to the door just to stay there. And I put my hands in my pockets, and she waits right there next to me.
Jesus.
With all, like, and then my friends finish up, and I'm like, all right, cool. Let's get out. And then, you know.
God, I wonder what it's like to be a black person that's not as nerdy looking as you. That must be horrible. You must be really profiled all the time.
So, yeah, I've been profiled.
A lot.
Yeah, a lot.
You're like, you have such a, I have two experiences to draw on.
I can only remember.
I'm one. Profiled all the time, though, just as much as you are. But positively. Like, I walk into a shop, positive, it's like, oh, maybe a new customer.
A regular? Oh my gosh, that's cool. He's going to the Louis Vuitton section.
I actually was profiled. I did go to an Asian place. I was profiled because I was when I was in treatment, I looked very cancery. Right. And we were trying to get this specific Asian thing for, like, I wanted to make miso soup or something like that.
Okay.
And this Asian guy, he sees how, like, my eyes look really, I look really jaundiced, you know, because, like, all the chemo fucks up your liver. And he says to my mom, you want ancient Chinese remedy herb? So he's like, this white lady. So he, like, and it made my mom, kind of fuck with my mom's head, you know, because, like, you're in a vulnerable state when your kid has cancer.
Yeah.
And she was like, and he was trying to sell her this ancient, like, some Chinese herb supplement that was really expensive.
I like how the adjective of ancient is always coupled with Chinese sometimes. Yeah,
ancient Chinese. It's no, like, there's no, like, ancient Mediterranean secret. That doesn't have the same ring to it.
Yeah.
You know, ancient Mediterranean secret. But, yeah, so they profiled her, like, oh, here's a rich white lady. Let's buy these. Let's get her to buy these things. I'm going to go shoplift just to fight the stereotypes.
Okay, so in a suit. So in our bracket so far is white man, white lady. Who comes after?
Wait. I think white Asian or Asian man is above white woman.
You think Asian man's above white woman?
Yeah. Maybe. Because no one looks at an Asian guy and is, like, thinking super negative stuff. Right?
I think that's, like, tricky territory.
Yeah? Well, depends what kind of Asian you think.
Because, like, yeah.
Let's say Chinese, Japanese.
Yeah, those are, you. I think they're like those. Oh my gosh, this is so fucking
Who cares?
I think they probably get less flack, yeah. But if you like, you know, you're one of like, you're like Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, people forget people from India are also Asian.
That's true. I'm saying, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
You know what you mean. Let's not.
So I think Chinese, Japanese, the more like fairer looking
Asian. Fairer looking Asian. So like a Japanese guy walks into a store.
It'll be like, oh, he's here for strictly business.
Strictly for business. He might buy this place. He might, maybe he'll ask me to, ask to take pictures of my feet or something.
Oh my gosh.
I wonder what Nell thinks. That's her name, right, Nell?
Yeah.
I'm so bad with names. I keep forgetting. But yeah, Nell, tell us. Give me your, it's like a playoffs bracket. Give me a bracket of privilege. Your privilege bracket.
Your privilege. Actually, yeah, everybody, give us your privilege bracket. And like, let us know what you think and how you think about it.
Yeah.
Hopefully one of you is like totally off.
Privilege madness.
Privilege madness.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to draft a black guy. He's my lower bracket.
Uh-huh.
No, but how about that trans black Jewish woman? Oh, shit, damn.
She's like an 83rd draft pick. I think Jewish is more plus, you know? I think Jewish...
Oh, you think Jewish is plus?
Yeah, sort of. I don't know.
All right, trans black Muslim woman.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That is bad. That's real bad. Everyone's going to be checking your pockets. Trans black...
Just stay home.
Wow.
At that point.
You know, it's really funny. My cousin, she's 12 years old. When she was younger, I mean, she was like 10 years old or 9 or whatever, she had a trans woman in, or trans girl, she's a little girl, in her theater camp.
Mm-hmm.
And they interviewed people about it. And it was on like Oprah or some show that I wouldn't watch, but my mom would. And it's funny how she said that no one cared. Like, no one amongst her peers really cared that they were trans.
Yeah.
I heard about this one person said that, like, I think it was on Reddit or something, or comment
the
section somewhere.
The greatest place ever.
Yeah. Oh, God. But they were saying how they were both trans men,
mm-hmm.
and they won prom. They were, like, gay trans men. They won prom at their high school. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
That, like, people are that accepting.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. If you're conservative enough, that's the moral decay of our country. But
yeah, no, I totally get you. That's cool.
I think it's funny how conservatives that think the moral decay of our country is like all of these things happening when they don't realize that they're the moral decay. Like, segregationists, the people that were opposed to integration, thought they were like way morally superior. They're like, this is the downfall of this country. Like, not realizing that, like, they're the ones that are the moral downfall of this country.
I mean, how many times does the person that does bad know they're bad? I mean, Lex Luthor doesn't think he's doing bad. He's like,
yeah,
fuck Superman.
No, he knows.
Okay.
But that's what makes him a supervillain.
True.
I think the most villainous of all villains are the people who don't know they're villains. Like in the Nuremberg trials.
Oh, thanks.
They're just following their orders.
I'm just following orders.
To kill Superman.
You know, fuck Superman for real, though.
Why?
I don't know.
He is definitely on the top rung of privilege.
Superhero alien privilege? Yeah.
He's a white male with superpowers.
That is the highest privilege.
There's no
That's
more
what every
privilege.
White male wants.
There's no more privilege than Superman.
No more privilege. Like,
I do have superpowers.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, white privilege is a superpower.
Yeah, I have the superpower.
Able to get a loan without hassle.
Able to walk into a store and never assume to be stealing.
There's this great comic I wanted to link you to that I will link you to later. It was amazing. I'm not gonna tell you, but you know what? I'll also see if I can put it up on the Facebook. It's fantastic.
Yeah. We need to start putting the links that we talked about on there.
Yeah, we should.
I think
we should. We should just start being more active with the community.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's God, all the social media stuff is so crazy.
Oh, it's the craziest.
It's like, it takes up so much time, you know? I need to get a social media manager with the money that I don't make off of comedy.
I was listening to something earlier about how this Philippine, this like 20-year-old Filipino guy.
Yeah.
Stole a bunch of information from one of these information aggregate companies.
Yeah.
And he was selling it.
Mm-hmm.
through a wired account in the Singapore.
Yeah.
Right? Through a wired account in Singapore, and he was just selling everybody's information to like at least 13,000 users.
Yeah.
And it was the biggest like security breach like
wow.
through that like through those means ever.
Don't worry, your information's safe with us, guys.
Funnel it, just email it at Black and Jew Podcast, and we'll protect it.
There's no security breach because the information we have is not valuable. There is nothing of value between the both of us. So
people will look us up. Comedians, no one wants to steal that identity.
What are you going to steal from them? Maybe some of my coffee making equipment. That's about all I got.
I have nothing. You want to take my Nintendo, my Club Nintendo account? It's currently platinum.
Club Nintendo account. Yes, this is what we need.
This is that's probably the most valuable online presence I have.
That's funny. More valuable than my comedy career is my Club Nintendo membership.
Yeah.
You know, I started drinking lately. I don't know if we talked about it on the last podcast, but I started drinking bulletproof coffee.
Bulletproof coffee?
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
Steel? What are you drinking?
Ground I'm going to pretend like you didn't say that. Well, what it is it's like coffee with butter and like coconut oil.
Shut up.
Yeah. Sounds and you pretty whip good. It. It's dude, it is really good. Cause you know, I've heard about it. Right. And it's kind of like sort of lumped in with the paleo craze, you know? And it's like this idea of like low carb, high fat, getting your energy from fat instead of carbs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's funny cause anytime I ask someone if they did bulletproof coffee, like I asked some specific people and I already knew the answer before they said yes. John Gregory, you know, he's really into that. And I asked him and I knew the answer. I'm like, do you drink bulletproof coffee? He's like, drink it every day. And it's butter with, you're supposed to put it with MCT oil, which is like this fat mixture or whatever. I don't trust it. It's like some, so I use coconut oil. I started doing the coconut oil today, but it's supposed to be like 2 tablespoons of butter.
Okay.
And some coconut oil. Or MCT oil or whatever, but I don't do that much because you see that article at Time Magazine that said butter isn't as bad for you as we thought?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I was saying how they don't really notice, there wasn't a huge correlation they noticed between increased heart disease risk and increased saturated fat consumption taken by itself, which, I mean, this study was kind of problematic in some ways, but whatever, I won't get into that at the moment. But, so yeah, you mix it up, you make your coffee, and then you mix it with the butter and the oil, and you put it in like a NutriBullet and just blend it up. And it's like kind of frothy, it tastes pretty good, but man, it's been great for me because it is like the greatest appetite suppressant ever.
Really?
Yeah, it's good, and it gives you like a really good buzz, like it gives you a lot of energy, like in a good way though, not in like a crappy... You know, like,
wow,
like it cool. doesn't give you the same jitteriness, you know, it gives you like energy and like it makes you think a little clearer. I don't know if it's because the lipids are blocking the absorption of coffee into my bloodstream because fats tend to do that. That's why like greasy foods and alcohol, you put the two together and you won't get as drunk. But yeah, it makes you think pretty clearly. And it's so, cause I'm trying to lose some weight, right? Mm-hmm. I need to take some weight off. And I've lost, like, I lost 4 pounds,
wow.
And then I went to 4th of July, and I gained, like, 2 back. And, yeah, I weighed myself when I got back from L.A., and given it was at night, and that day I'd eaten a pastrami sandwich, so it doesn't work, but I was, like, 200 pounds. And now I'm at, like, let me see, I weigh myself every morning to, I think I'm, like, 190 this, yeah, 190
wow, that's awesome.
This
congrats
morning.
To you, dude.
Yeah.
So
it's not that big of an accomplishment, it's, like, 4 pounds.
What book did you use to get into coffee in the first place? I think you used
Blue Bottle, The Art of Coffee.
Blue Bottle, The Art of Coffee.
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right. Good to know. In case, you know, any other listeners are interested, because I know we got...
That's a great... If you want to learn how to brew coffee, Blue Bottle, The Art of Coffee is the best, because I haven't found some... Like, the pour-over coffee they make, there's no one else I've found. I went to a bunch of different coffee shops, varying levels of pretentiousness. No one does the coffee as well as they do.
Okay. And how much equipment is actually involved in your whole coffee process?
Let me think. The really expensive thing is the grinder.
The grinder.
Unless you don't mind hand grinding, which is like, it's kind of like a pepper mill.
Okay.
You know, those are like $40 to $60. Mm-hmm. The grinder that I have is really expensive. It's like a $200 KitchenAid grinder, which is, it's very useful piece of equipment because I use it literally every day. It is the most used piece of equipment in my kitchen besides my scale.
Because, you know, Mike's pushing that work. Huh? He's selling that yay, yo.
Yeah, selling that yay, bro. Yeah, yo, yay, bro.
We actually started this podcast because Mike used to be blow my money. Dealer.
Yeah. We're doing coke and like, we're just like, hey man, we should start a podcast. The only coke idea ever followed through with.
Okay, so you got the grinder.
Uh-huh.
And you, I know that you also, okay, you have a French press, but that's something else. But I mean, by
okay, so let me walk you through it. Okay. All right. First thing you need, the grinder is so, so important. All right. Because first off, when you have the beans, all right, you want to get whole beans. Ground beans are only good for 5 minutes before they start losing flavor. So you can imagine if you get like a Bustelo package, right, that's pre-ground at espresso. Because like espresso grinds are good for 90 seconds before you got to brew them. So like you can imagine that a pre-ground Bustelo package that's been sitting around for God knows how long, it's garbage, right? It is. It's garbage. And you get the grinder. That's really important. The blade grinders that they sell like are bad because the motor's really close to the coffee and it creates a lot of friction and it heats up the coffee and just really ruins the flavor. So you got to get either a hand burr grinder, which is like a pepper mill, mm-hmm. right? I think Portex is the name of the people that make it. I could be wrong about that. Or I got the KitchenAid. It's awesome. Or you can get one for like $130. I forget the name of it, but you know, it's good to get a good grinder and you'll use it every day. And then you need a scale. Okay, to weigh out your coffee and to weigh out the water when you make it. All right. So the other expenses are not, you need a tea kettle, which most people have. Mm-hmm. You need a scale, which I got for like $20. Mm-hmm. A great, great scale. The AWS 2000 scale. Great if you're a drug dealer too. It'll serve multiple functions. And then you get a kettle, a gooseneck kettle. That's expensive. It's like $50. Mm-hmm. You gotta like special order from Amazon, but you need it if you're gonna make pour over. Then you need a pour over dripper, right? Which costs like I think $20 maybe, and that's pretty much on a thermometer, which aren't that expensive. You can get them at
the one you use though is an attachment. Like
it's just a like wipe. A meat thermometer, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like it's a digital meat thermometer. You can get them at Bath & Beyond.
In the blue bottle book?
Yeah. It is. They tell excellent. You everything you need. And they tell you how to roast it, too.
Oh, excellent.
Roasting beans is the shit. I love roasting beans. It's great. Because it's that, all you need is a perforated baking sheet and two metal sieves. That's
wow.
It. And it's like, the coffee is really good and so cheap. It's like, I think Folgers is like $2 more than the coffee that I roast.
Really?
Pre-ground, garbage, disgusting Folgers. Peasant Folgers.
Pig disgusting. Yeah. Just mustard race Folgers.
Pig disgusting mustard race Folgers is only like $2 more than this. And this bean, and since you roast it yourself, your beans are never more than a week old. So, which is awesome because freshness is really important with coffee.
Okay, excellent.
So if you want to get into it, get Blue Bottle, The Art of Coffee. It's a great book.
All right, there you go, guys.
Well, I'm going to write this. I should write down the list of links. So we got Blue Bottle. Yeah, all right, cool. I forgot the other ones, but whatever. We'll remember to put up the links the next time.
All right, excellent. You guys are going to get Mike's coffee, you know, starter kit link set.
Free for every listener of the podcast.
Free for every listener of the podcast. So check that out, guys. Your coffee's really bitching, by the way. You're the only coffee I drink.
Yeah.
I honestly do not like coffee, but I only drink your coffee. And,
I've turned into like such a coffee geek.
No,
like,
that's so totally cool.
It's funny because November of last year, November before I went on my trip, I did not give a shit about coffee. Like, I never drank it. I did not care. And now I'm obsessed with it. Like, I'm in search of the best espresso places to like, and it's hard because sometimes it's hard to find a decent cup of coffee. Espresso. Like if you really like it, it's hard to find because, you know, if you're going to get espresso, there's only like Panther makes awesome espresso. Like you can't fuck with them, you know?
So wait, what you make is American though, right?
Yeah. The one I make pour over.
Pour over. All right. Black, just regular black coffee.
Yeah.
An espresso. What's an espresso?
Like, well, that okay. Tiny so cup? You like, When you think, when people say American coffee, what they really mean is drip coffee, which is in the machines, right? Which is kind of the, but so there's like, if you really want to get into the nuances of it, there's different ways to make coffee. There's, you know, either you can make it in a cafetera, you can make it pour over, you can do it in a French press. Those are what we consider quote unquote American coffee, in a French press or pour over, where you pour it over the beans. But espresso is a totally different animal. What espresso is you take an espresso machine and you grind up the coffee really fine, and you put it in the machine, and then you shoot hot water under a lot of pressure through the coffee in the machine.
That's where that, okay, I've seen that before. Not a cortadito. That's something.
That's espresso. Oh, that's a form of espresso. Cortadito is, I believe, milk foam, hot milk, and a shot of espresso with sugar, of course.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Dude, I got to say, I went to this Cuban-style bakery called in California. It's really popular. Porto's Bakery, that's the name of it. And I got to say, man, their cortaditos are better than A Street.
Really?
Yeah, because they use, like, fresh ground coffee. They didn't use, Bustelo. But it was great, dude. Their cortaditos were, like, better than the authentic thing, unfortunately. And they had Cuban sandwiches that were amazing. Like, it was great.
You know where I was last
night? You know what they call the guava? The pastelitos?
What?
Guava strudel. Like, are you fucking serious?
That's a nice way to package it for LA.
Yeah, exactly. All those fucking gringos.
I was, have you ever heard of Bread and Butter?
Oh, yeah, I've been there before.
Oh, I was there last night.
Great place.
Holy shit, that place was amazing.
Great restaurant.
Great restaurant. I had the fried chicken there.
Ooh.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
As soon as that happened, they're like, sir, we're going to have someone watch you the entire time.
I know you're sitting right next to our herb garden, but yeah.
Are you trying to steal something?
You're trying to steal the dirt?
It's possible to steal something at a restaurant.
Let's take that jar of beans you have sitting above me. That place was amazing.
Yeah, Bread and Butter is great. Great place.
It's so good. Oh, and my girlfriend had the pork empanadas.
Oh yeah.
And then we also had the bread, pan con queso. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh. And then I had the goat cheese flan. Killing it.
Goat cheese flan.
Yes.
Damn, dude.
Had some of
the place is great. That's a great restaurant. I love going there. I wonder, more people need to know about it though.
They're going to get the Black and Jew bump. Guys.
Black and Jew bump, guys.
Check
you
out.
You have five potential new customers. Black and Jew bump.
Black and Jew bump. Go check out Bread and Butter in Miracle Mile. That's a legitimately amazing restaurant.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to find, so Google it, but
yeah.
It's great.
You have the internet. If you're listening to us, you have the internet.
You know, I found a little hidden gem in where was it? On Miracle Mile also. This place called Baklava and Coffee.
Baklava. Oh, that's along the main road, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's on the main Miracle Mile. This is why I go there, all right? It's usually pretty empty. And it's owned by some Turkish guys. Apparently, according to the guy that worked there, it's owned by some Turkish guys that own a marble store in Doral and a mall in Turkey. Like, could you be more Turkish? Like, we have a marble store, we have a baklava coffee, we have a shopping mall. So the reason I went, because I went there because I had to take a shit, and I was at the post office and they didn't have a bathroom. So I'm like, where will it let me in? Obviously not this boutique baby store that you have to ring the bell that exists on Miracle Mile. So I went to this place, felt bad, I got an espresso. But I saw that they had a La Marzocho espresso maker. And there's a really good espresso maker. So I'm like, I have to go back here. Like, when I go to a coffee place, I'll always take note of what kind of espresso maker they have. And if they have a La Marzocho, I'm like, this is going to be good coffee. And it was amazing. No one ever goes there. All right. But this guy made me a cup. Like, I got a little macchiato with just like espresso, with just a little bit of milk foam on top. And it was so chocolatey, so delicious. The crema, if you're a coffee geek, you know what I'm talking about. The crema was really good. It's like that foamy stuff that comes out before. If you mix it with sugar, it's called the espuma if you're making Cuban coffee. Dude, great cup of coffee, but no one goes there.
Oh, man. I got to check it out before they... No, I mean, those Turkish guys are probably finding good money. They got a marble store and a whole mall.
Maybe this is a way to embezzle money or write-offs or something. Who knows?
What a great way to embezzle. You're a criminal restaurant, but God damn, is your coffee good.
Dude, and they sell Panther coffee, too.
Oh.
I don't know. The owners of Panther are from Portland.
Really?
Not surprised there.
Cool.
But it was good, man. But every time I go to a coffee place, like if they have a La Marzocco espresso maker, I'm on board. It wasn't like the best model, but it was good. I sound like such a cunt. This is the best model. But yeah, those things are expensive though, dude. Like the high-end ones are like $20,000.
$20,000?
That's how much like high-end espresso makers are. Like $20,000.
Shit.
Like if you want a decent espresso maker for your restaurant, you're talking like 10, 15 grand at least.
What?
Yeah. The Blue Bottle guy was saying like that the power required for one of those a month is like crazy. It's like,
oh, like the energy, like yeah, the electricity. Yeah.
You have
going.
To, first off, you got to get an electrician to custom do the power so it runs on 240 volts instead of 120 volts, like the European voltage, because it needs that high voltage. And yeah, it's like, it's crazy. And it's like their home version is $7,000.
The home version is $7,000.
Good. Just stick with a cafetera. Like that's the only, the Blue Bottle guy says that you can make it well. You can make a good cup of espresso. He's like, it's good because you can get a good cup of espresso and spend less than $10,000. So I'm going to make some, I think, later after we're done podcasting. I'm going to make some of the, I've never made it in the cafetera, but my mom makes really good Cuban coffee. But yeah, I just got an espresso blend, so check it out.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good to, damn. All right. Good to know. Check it out, guys. Two wonderful places right there in your neighborhood.
Yeah, check it out. We're getting paid for this. No, we're not at all.
No, we're not.
All right. I want to read what the dude asked us. So I'm just going to say first names on the podcast
because
I don't want to say. So our friend Ronald. All right.
New listener.
Every time I get like a message or a comment on our Facebook, I'm like, yeah, it's some random person. And then Reggie's just like, oh yeah, I know them. Like that was like they're this my buddy.
Well, I mean they are. It was like I literally just met this guy.
Oh really?
Yeah. No, he's not like he hasn't been my boss for long. Like,
oh, and your new job?
Yeah, my new job.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah. Cool.
And I used to have another boss, but now he got fired. But now I have a new boss, and like that's him. So I literally just met him. He listens to a lot of podcasts.
Which one is he in this picture?
He is the one in the very far back right here.
This guy?
Yeah, Ronald.
Okay. Whatever. Doesn't matter. All right. So, questions. Why LA and not New York City? Can you guys go over your process or whatever it is that happens that takes a joke or a bit or a whole set from a series of thoughts to the stage? Loving this podcast. Big fan. Well, thank you, Ronald.
Thank you for writing in. See, guys, it's totally possible.
All right, so first question. Why LA and not New York City? I guess that's for me.
Yeah, that would be more for you.
Yeah.
I mean, we could both discuss like what now, we know about like the culture and all this.
That's interesting. No, it's just me, Reggie. You're not allowed to talk.
All right, totally fine.
Check your privilege, Reggie.
Check your podcast privilege.
Check your podcast privilege. No, you know, it could be a horribly misguided decision. That's a possibility.
You want to do comedy. That is a horribly misguided
decision. Yeah, that's already in itself. That's a horribly misguided decision. I choose LA because I'm really looking to get into writing and producing. Not just stand-up comedy. I'm not just trying to make it as a comic. And most comics want to end up being a writer. But I'm really interested in the business aspect of it. And I'm really interested in the writing aspect of it. And I researched a lot of TV shows, and most of them are based in LA. So the shows that I would like to work on are in LA, and the best way to do it is just kind of go out there and meet people. And that's how you get on TV shows. I've talked to some people that work on various TV shows, and they say, yeah, you know, it's not, there's no one way to do it. It's usually informal. It's not like you're going to see a job listing like needed staff writer on blah, blah. It's like someone will refer you or you'll start off as an assistant and like then a staff writer will leave and then let you submit for the show, or you'll be a PA, or you'll be like some people they're like finance. They're in like the accounting department at a studio and they hear of an open, like there's a million ways to do it. But the best way to increase your options, in my opinion, which again could be horribly misguided, is to live in the place where the things are happening. So there's more opportunities that are going to happen hanging out in LA versus hanging out in Miami, because that's where all the shows are based. That's where the industry is based. And you eventually have to move to New York and LA. Now, New York is the place to go if you want to get better as a comic, because you can go up so many times a night there. The audiences are really receptive. Most comedy clubs are in a small geographic area. So it's like, if you go to New York, you could be going up. Like in Miami, you can go up, if you're lucky, you can go up like maybe 6 times a week, 7. And you could do that in a night in New York City. You know, my friend, he is a comic in New York City. He's been living there for a while, and he said he's done a show with like 5 people, and Louis C.K. needs to work out a bit, so he just shows up, and that's just how it happens, you know? So New York will get you really good at comedy. There is writing in New York. You can be discovered in New York, et cetera, but a lot of them are late night shows, and late night shows, in my opinion, might be going the way of the Buffalo, just because the demographics are just getting older and older and older. So I'm really not as interested in work. Like I'd love to work on one, but I'm more interested in working on like a multi-camera sitcom, like Modern Family or something like that, or like an FX show. So LA, in my opinion, from my calculations, would be the place to be. And also the weather's really nice. And Christine does not want to move to New York City because she lived there for a bunch of years. She hates the weather. She hates the lifestyle of having to walk everywhere. And I would not be thrilled about that. I went to LA, and I went on a trip, and it was amazing. Like, I really love the city. I would live there even if I decided I want nothing to do with comedy, which I doubt will happen. But yeah, that's why I'm choosing LA over New York. So the next question is directed at both of us. It's, can you guys go over your process or whatever it is that happens that takes a joke or a bit or a whole set from a series of thoughts to the stage? What do you do, Reggie?
What do I do?
Yeah.
Damn. I do nothing. I'm just naturally good.
Effortless.
Okay, no. What I really do. So before I, like, let's just say I want a new joke. Yeah. It starts with that.
Want a new joke.
I want a new joke.
Okay.
I've either exhausted something. I've exhausted whatever current set I have.
Yeah.
I don't feel like this current set is good. I want to add to it. I first start with wanting a new joke. So I want a new joke. Okay. So then from that point, it's just me thinking. I do a bunch of thinking. I do a lot of my thinking in the shower, because I read something where, like, if you're in the shower, you kind of run the part of your brain that, you know, is never really active.
Uh-huh.
And that really gets, you know, the gears firing. So I usually do a lot of my thinking in the shower, and then I do it, you know, while driving, stuff like that. So I think, and then, like, by the time I'm done, or like I feel like I've finished my thinking, I'll have like about maybe 20 premises for a joke that I write down on a legal pad. And it's 20 premises. And by the way, I do this all by hand. I don't like typing anything.
Yeah.
I very rarely write things on my phone. Mm-hmm. I do it all by hand. So I have 20 premises, and then I go through all of them and then see like how far each one can go. Out of 20, maybe only 4 are really good. And then out of those 4, maybe at my current point, you know, in my experience, I can only really make 2 worthwhile.
Hmm.
So I do that, and then, like, let's say I land, you know, 1 really solid joke or 1 really solid premise.
Yeah.
I write it all out. Like, I write the whole thing. And whatever I wrote down was how far I could take it with just me by myself without any stage time.
Yeah.
So here I have, like, this skeleton. And I'm like, okay, cool. Now let me take this up on stage. So I take what I wrote down up on stage, and I do it. And then usually up on stage, I can write, you know, in the organs, the muscles, and all that other stuff. And then I think this is like a bad habit of mine, but sometimes I'll use my jokes in regular conversation with like people. I'll just like say a joke like, you know, that's so funny. You know what else happened to me? And then I lead into a joke, and then I use it. I'm like, okay, cool.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's funny.
And then and then other times, what I get jokes from are also just like me talking with people and talking with friends and then talking with family and then talking with my girlfriend. I usually, like, they'll say something and I'm like, you're not a comedian, I'll take that. Well, not all the time, but they'll say something and then it gets me thinking. And then it gets me thinking about, you know, it makes a new connection in my head.
Yeah.
And then I take that connection and I run with it.
Okay.
And then also, just if that's not the process, when I'm not writing something, I'll usually think of something and then I'll write that down and then come visit it later. So that's how I do that. And if it's a real good bit and I've, you know, and it's been tested and it gets laughs and I have all the timing down, all the pauses down, all the faces down, all the hand gestures down, then it stays, you know, it stays in the set. And and then, you know, in a grander sense, everything that I've built up, this chunk that I've built up.
Yeah.
Let's say I have each of my jokes is 3 minutes. Let's just say that, right? Yeah. Now I need to find how these separate segments of 3 minutes connect to a greater 5 or 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So I start building the connections. I make transitions between each joke. Then I have, let's say, 10 minutes, and I'm like, okay, cool. This is 10 minutes. Let's take this up somewhere where that will allow me to do 10. And that's the process.
Interesting. So different from my process.
Really?
Yeah, it's way different. I find with comics, like, there's really no right way to do it because everyone has their different processes, I guess. Now, my process has changed because when I was in college, I did stand up 4 times when I was like 19 years old. And when I did that, I wrote out literally word for word everything I was going to say for all my jokes. I prepared a lot. Then I didn't do stand-up for a long time because I'm a procrastinator and I never really got back around to it until I got diagnosed with cancer, got out of my crappy job, was able to have free time to do stand-up. And my first 5 minutes, I practiced that over and over and over and over again. And I probably told this story before, but I went to Casa de Jaja, right? I asked Daniel Reskin if I could go up. And then Ani Issa, I had 3 minutes on Twilight, right? How absurd, how Edward Cullen, the main character in Twilight, is a pedophile because he's 100 years old. He's dating a 17-year-old. And Ani Issa went up before me, and he pretty much hit all the beats I wanted to hit, right? Like, almost exactly, like, verbatim, okay? And it's impossible that he stole it from me because I had never performed in Miami, ever. Or I've never performed this bit, right? So it was just a complete coincidence. So I freaked the fuck out and scrambled for other ideas that I just had. I was just like, oh, this could be a funny thing, but now I have to do it on stage because I just got a huge chunk of my set wiped out. I had a little heart attack when he started doing those jokes. Never has happened to me since then, actually. But after that, I still really prepared before I went on stage. And I think that I compensated for my greenness by really, really, really thinking a joke through before I ever went up with it on stage. So I would never really write it down word for word because I try that sometimes, but I find when I do that, I sound so stiff that it comes out like really bad. Maybe I need to experiment with it more. And then one day I'm like, you know, I would go up on stage and let's say I was doing it last minute because sometimes you're like, oh, I didn't think I could do stand-up today. Let me go do stand-up today. And, you know, it's very last minute and you just have a premise in your head. And I would like kind of freak out. I'm like, oh, I want to do this joke, but I haven't really written it out. And then like the week will go by and I will have not written out the joke. And then it's like, why do I need to wait for that? Let me do an experiment and just go up and try to write it on stage just kind of like with a premise, an idea of a punchline. And that experiment isn't over, unfortunately, which it probably should be. So that's kind of what I do. I won't sit down and write, right? Because I have this huge backlog of material that I wrote over the years that I'm trying to get through and trying to test it all out, right? It's almost exhausted with some new stuff thrown in. So I'll come up with... So since I have this huge backlog, I don't really need to sit down and write that much. So I usually just come up with an idea spontaneously. And I don't really sit down and I'm like, let me think of some jokes. I do that with my tweets, but not with my jokes. So I'll just have an idea, and then how do I turn this into a joke with a punchline, with structure, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'll kind of work it out on stage. A lot of times I'll have a concept roughly formed in my head and then just go up on stage and then just do it. And like a lot of times it'll bomb horribly. Sometimes it's actually a good joke, but I'm sort of learning over time how to just structure a joke so I can just have a premise and easily turn it into a joke.
Yeah.
And yeah, usually that's what I do. Like I wrote, and then yeah, like you'll do, I'll like mix and match different jokes and stuff, and I'll always do it in like 5 minute chunks. Like if I do 5 minutes, I'll do 5 minutes about one subject, right? And then I'll have like maybe 7 minutes on that subject, and then cut out 2 minutes and then make it five. So like now I've got a tight 15 that consists of three different subjects. That's cancer, sex, and the civil rights movement and Facebook, which makes sense if you watch me do the bit live. But yeah, that's pretty much my writing process. I usually just kind of do it on stage, and I never ever write anything down by hand. I do everything on my iPhone or on my computer, and I just kind of come up with ideas. It's not usually, I usually don't like write out a whole bit. I'll just be like I'll have, like I have my notes here, for example. Let me joke idea. Yeah, I have this list, because I like syncing everything over the cloud. So like I have, it shows up on my computer along with my iPhone. So like this is one. Having cancer is like watching your ugly friend make out with someone at the bar. Good for them. They've been through a lot. Clapping in parentheses. That was just the idea. So then I would go up on stage and I'm like, I just would kind of have the idea in my head and just let it come out. Cause I find that if I overwrite it, that I get really, really stiff. Some people can do that. I think that's better personally, to be able to write it out like that. But for me, I sound a little too stiff, so I don't do it.
I also kind of,
you don't
like,
sound stiff though, even though you write it out. It doesn't, it seems so spontaneous, you know?
That's the other, like depending on the room too, I also kind of structure my, what I like, depending on the room depends, like, okay, like let's say I'm going to Casa de Ha.
Yeah.
That's going to be the best of the best, with probably one new joke thrown in.
Yeah.
And let's say I go to Churchill's. That's mm-hmm. all new jokes, just off the cuff.
Yeah.
That's where I go do that. Like, it's the whole set's going to be new jokes that don't connect very well. And me kind of just working on texts, you know, like T-E-C-H, texts. It's a concept in fighting game. Like, texts are like...
That's interesting.
No,
way to nerd it up, nerd
text,
guy.
Like techs are things where, like, in fighting games, where you notice that, like, the systems of a fighting game and the characters around you and, like, the characters you're fighting with, some things will work best with other things. Like in Street Fighter, let's just say Ryu's Hadouken is slower than Ken's.
Okay.
So the way you control space with Ryu is very different from Ken.
Okay.
So the techs involved are very different. So when I
so
say,
the technical,
like,
aspects...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So when
so
I
so how
say,
does this apply to joke writing?
Oh, how does this apply to joke writing? Well, let's say if I'm at Churchill's.
Yeah.
I have premises and I have a crowd.
Yeah.
Now let's see how I can be loose with this crowd and loose with my jokes, and like let me feel comfortable informing the idea organically on stage rather than writing it out.
Yeah.
And let me play around with the crowd more. Let me be comfortable in discomfort. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. It's good to be uncomfortable on stage a lot. Like,
and I'm sorry. I was just going to say, let me listen to what they're saying.
You're sorry for interrupting me, interrupting you?
Well, some one of us has to be. So, what I do is, like, I will listen more in. Sometimes when someone yells something out, like at a book show, I'll ignore it or just, like, you know, make an offhand quip that, like, lets people, like, okay, he heard that, but he doesn't really care.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. I'll listen to more and, like, play with that idea more, like, with the crowd idea more. So I just work on texts or techniques, stuff like that.
Okay. Interesting. So then you don't really plan it out that much. You do a lot on stage then.
Yeah.
Okay. It's interesting. I like talking to... We should ask every comic what their writing process is, I think, when they come on.
It's very... I mean, we're totally different.
Yeah, like, I can't... I'm so bad when I write it out, because then it just sounds... Because then, like, what's... When it... It's like, what sounds cool in your head is, like, that sounded... Like, I had a joke that I wrote recently that I love. You hate it when you love a joke, and then the audience is like, meh. You're like, this is gonna fucking kill... And then...
Yeah.
You go out and the audience is like, no, it's whatever, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
like I looked back at my notes about the jokes I wrote before I started doing stand-up, and like the writing changes so much because you don't realize how unnatural some things sound when you write it out.
Yeah.
And then until you do it on stage, you're like, that sounds stupid. Like, that's not going to get a laugh. It's not going to make a connection with the audience.
I try and keep that in mind a lot when I write. I also, when I write, I also have like little symbols that like, you know, say mean different things. Like I have a pause symbol, like pause here. And then I have,
interesting.
Oh, people will clap here or will more than likely clap here.
More than likely clap here.
And
I have those, a lot of those in my cancer stuff.
Yeah. Like
when I get
like,
an applause break, comedians get cancer and then talk about it. People will clap.
So I have like a lot of those things. Like I also have like slow down, make face, use hands, like different things, or like, you know, swing microphone.
Swing microphone. What's that? I wonder what that symbol looks like. Yeah, you know, that's funny because like that's so. I used to kind of do that more, but I don't anymore. Like I used to have in parentheses like do this voice, do that.
Yeah,
but that, now that it's too. Like it's like. Yeah, like it's a little more what's it called? A little more loose in my annotation. I like this, the idea for this joke. It might just work as a tweet, but not believing in climate change is a cop out, like telling a girl you don't believe in marriage. I feel like they make a good tweet, but I want it to be a joke. I think that's funny, you know?
Yeah.
It's like you just. But it's true, though. It's like you say you don't believe in climate change. It's like telling a girl, like, you want to keep doing a thing that you like and don't want to sacrifice for the greater good. So you use, like, a stupid excuse. You don't believe in it. It's like, come on, it exists. Just, like, just admit it. Marriage is an institution. If you want to be with a girl, you're going to have to get married to her if you want to be with her forever. You can't just say you don't believe in it. Just admit it. Like, yeah, I kind of want to stick my dick in other people and not have to worry about the long-term repercussions. You know? It's like, I want to drive my SUV, but I really don't give a shit if the environment's destroyed. Just admit it, you know?
Anyways. Man up.
Yeah, man the fuck up. That was a good question. We talked a lot about that one. Damn.
Yeah. It's a real good question.
That's what happens when you give comedians an opportunity to talk about themselves.
I was so glad I got to go first during that question.
Yeah.
I was real mad. I was like, I have opinions on LA, even though I've never been.
Well, why? You can give opinions on LA.
No, I was just I don't want to.
Why not?
Because I don't really have much to say about LA.
The moment's passed?
Moments, that too.
I'm sorry, Reggie.
It's okay.
I just didn't think... I don't know, because, I mean, you're technically not choosing LA because you're not going out there. Yeah. Are you going to move out to New York or LA at some point?
Yeah. No, most definitely.
You should.
I will.
You should.
Have to.
When are you going to do it?
I was thinking, like, maybe in 3 years. Maybe, like...
That long?
Eh.
What's holding you back?
Just schooling. I better finish the schooling.
Schooling.
Yeah. Like, gotcha. My parents are really, like, they need me to finish the schooling and then, like, okay...
Yeah,
you can go as long as you got that degree.
School those fools in comedy after you finish school.
So
that's what's holding you back, is the schooling.
Yeah, just that.
It's the book learning.
Just that.
Do you have like an associate yet, or?
I'm about to finish schooling. Actually.
Gotcha. So you're gonna finish with an associate or a bachelor's?
An associate.
That's good.
And then like bachelor's, I want to live like worthless. Either in New York or some or in New York. Get the residency there, and go to school real cheap over there.
Gotcha. That's a good thing to do. That's what Luxshay is going to dental school in New York.
Oh yeah, he is.
But he's going to have a lot of time to do stand up though. Unfortunately,
yeah,
he's so funny though.
Oh, he's
that
hilarious.
That guy is really funny.
Oh yeah, I got to talking with him one time at Speak
so
Fridays.
Unique. So unique too.
Yeah, we should have him on the podcast.
We should.
I hope he hasn't left yet.
No, he's leaving soon, though.
Yeah,
we'll talk to him.
All right, awesome.
So what were you saying about him at Speak Fridays?
No, I just met him, and then we got to talking, and, like, real cool guy. Like, I've been meaning to, like, hit him up somewhere, but got to talking, real cool guy, real, like, it's, like, the way he is on stage is exactly the same way he is, like, with you.
Uh-huh.
And, well, you know, probably a bit more embellishing up on stage, but, like, sharp... Hilarious and like just all around great.
Yeah, he has this demeanor and disposition that is just like, it's like so, just so conducive to comedy because it's like a little awkward, that's just great, man. He's funny. Like he's one of the I've heard him do a bunch of jokes a lot of times, but it's always funny to me just because like it's this whole package that really sells it, you know. more so than just his jokes themselves. Yeah. It's like the whole package. All right, so you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, let's wrap it up.
All right, so the people can find me at Mike Marianoff on Twitter, Mike Marianoff Comedy on Facebook, Reggie, Ratchet underscore Reggie on Twitter, Black Dot Is on Instagram, and I have shows coming up on July 11th, this Friday. I will be at Laugh Attack, Artistic Vibes. It's going to be awesome. John Vargas is featuring. Johnny Trabs is headlining. You might have seen his sketch Gayo on Tosh.0. It's going to be a great night. And then on July 30th, I will be at Tavolino's, part of the Wise Guys comedy show in Coral Springs.
I have a comedy show too. Oh. You could check me out at Maloko in Midtown Marketplace.
Nice. Is that tonight? Is that Thursday?
That's Wednesday on the 9th.
Wednesday on the 9th. Okay, cool.
Yeah, Wednesday on the 9th.
Wait, Maloko does his Wednesday show now?
I was told it was the 9th. Did I get that wrong?
The second Thursday.
Second Thursday?
I'm pretty sure it's second Thursday.
Well,
Loco Maloko, second Thursday.
Yeah, let me...
They've never done a Tuesday show. Unless it's a new Wednesday show is a new thing. We're having...
July 10th. The show's at 9.
Exactly.
There you go.
And I'll be at Casa de Haha tonight. I'm not sure if the podcast will be out early enough for that to mean anything, but if it is, I'll be there.
Okay, cool.
So until next time.
All right. Bye.